Thank you. So the first thing I want to do is introduce myself again, because there may be some people like me that don't read all their emails. Aisha, she, her, and your majesty. I grabbed that word up years ago because the invisibility of women as we age is something I'm not choosing to invite the world to see me. So that's why I have that in there, along with my pronouns. I want to thank Mark for evidently bringing my name up, and the rest of you who said, okay. So I want to say that appreciation in this moment. At this moment, I am sitting in the mystery of how this is happening, not the technological part, but I am here as a descendant of an enslaved peoples. And I have found this path, like those stories they tell about that turtle that comes up every 1,000 years. But that is the gift of this path to me. The mystery, being with the mystery. And for me, being with inquiry. And the portal that I enter is my lineage. I am the descendant of somebody that looked up in 1743, knowing that they would never see freedom in their lifetime. I am a descendant of the Mammy, who, contrary to popular belief, was a lot of times they were young girls, rocking a baby that was one day gonna call them a nigger and sell their children. And yet, I'm a descendant of some folks that said, I'm hurt, let's sing about it. I'm on this chain game. What's the rhythm? This woman that says I'm part of the family pays me $10 a week. I am literally the child of a janitress. My mother cleaned office buildings, and my grandmother did too. I sat underneath the ladies that worked for people like Eastland, one of the most racist senators to come through in the 20th century. And I'm also the daughter of a woman who was president of one of the first Black deaf clubs in Washington, D.C., Helen May Wilson. And we'd go to Gallaudet and tell them a thing or two. I give you that lineage because while the practice for me has been one of questioning, I found it interesting how often I am not asked questions, that the spiritual genius of my people is not interrogated. I've written about Harriet Tubman, and while she was not just an action figure, there seems to be little interest in how did she even leave? Because as this practice, I think, says to all of us, you can look and see the material world and that says, this is true. And it's not, it's delusion. And this little Black woman with a knot on her head looked at everything and said, this is a delusion. You may not think I'm human, but I am. To me, that's some high order practice. That's very high order practice. It's so interesting to be here with you because many, many, many years ago, I was in San Francisco and ran into the Zen Center there. But it was culturally inaccessible to me. At that point, it was men, white men in Black robes. I guess people spoke to me because they let me in the building, but that was sort of, yeah, the culture. Over the years I have been in this practice, I have had to find my way because often the practice is a Bethesda, Maryland practice. It's a Johannesburg practice. And if you live in Bethesda or Johannesburg, you're supposed to, that's the practice you got. That's the life. But if you come by way of Anacostia Southeast, of Soweto, practice is different. Although I will say, given what's happening on the planet, it is my belief we all need a Soweto practice. We all need a Ferguson practice, but that's just what I believe. And so I wanted to share my Anacostia Southeast, my Soweto practice with you today. And that practice is very much about a lineage of capacity. The ability to be with. It is interesting. Many years ago, I asked some very highfalutin people at a talk in the woods, because when you get off the bus, it's nothing but trees. If you have a car, you probably don't notice that, but at the time I didn't. But anyway, so I asked them about my son. I have a Black son. And I asked them how they negotiate teaching awareness and not fear, because that was my interest for my son. And these two very important people looked at me and went, I got nothing. And I have had the opportunity to be with children in meditated, you know, meditation places who come from privilege, and they're cutting themselves and they're taking pills. So I understand you not, where my inquiry was, I understand you don't connect to maybe the police killing your child, but I know you're going through something. But I have sat with the inability to access what I was going through in their own suffering. And so I've started a group called Heart With, because I do not believe we can move past history. That's what this practice has taught me. It happened. My grandmother used to say, baby, I'd whip your butt now, no use to crying. What you gonna do? What? It happened. But I do believe we might be able to connect through the pain of living this life, whether you're living it in a penthouse or you're over on Bowen Road, if you were open to that. I am a Buddhist. My foundational school is Jodo Shinshu, which is a Pure Land school founded in Japan by Shinran Shonen. It is literally a tradition for the peasants. You know, the inquiry was, well, okay, they're pushing those oxes. How can we help them move into awareness when they push in oxes and come home exhausted and what can they? So it's a primarily awareness through chanting. Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu, Namo Amida Butsu. And it is also a practice of gratitude, of entering into the light of Amida Buddha. And it is through that light that I was able to finally access a sitting practice that does not harm me. someone wrote a book a couple of years ago about the difficulty when you've gone through a lot of just sitting. While that might not be a great idea, depending on where you are in your practice. They could have asked me, but there you go. Another missed opportunity. In this journey, I bumped up against the lack of curiosity, the lack of interrogating, should I do what's out there in here? If you know what I mean, we're bringing the corporate sensitivity. I'm sensitive to it because I've spent a lifetime negotiating it, trying to make a living. And it's been curious to me to encounter those same structures, those same characteristics within a tradition that for me is all about, let us sit down together. And see what we find. I have also been curious about using the word Sangha when, from my perspective, association might be more appropriate. Only because within my cultural context, community comes from knowing, not from we've been sitting together a while. Well, in fact, after the murder of George Floyd, I wrote a piece and the ending was, I've been sitting next to you for 10, 15 years and you don't have my phone number. So, you know, in that moment, folks were grabbing for Black folks they knew. And I was saying, well, what is that? I'm interested in how a community of practitioners can be together if we don't know how we look like when we're all done, when we're broke down. What does a practice look like when everything hurts? When the body won't do what you want it to do? When the fact that you didn't kill anybody today is a win? that is what has informed my Anacostia Soweto Ferguson practice, because often as I have moved in this practice, the focus, while the word is sati and awareness, it's a lot of thinking and thinking and thinking and thoughts and thoughts and thoughts. And I'm going, well, okay. And curated spaces. What does it mean? I remember when I started this practice, I was living in Anacostia, you know, places that are purposely under-resourced, and they're noisy places. And, you know, my son's running around, and I have no idea why I was getting on, walking, getting two trains and two buses to come sit with some people. But I did that. That's the mystery, right? How do we get to the places we're getting to? And I was so interested in this insistence, or not, I won't say insistence, that's not fair, this culture of quiet. Because I don't live in quiet. I live with the mindfulness bell of sirens and ambulances and people being in their culture of connection through voice and music. What does a practice look like that doesn't have that? I can tell you that for me, it's built capacity. I've been interested in what does a practice look like when every day since you became a mother that you're looking at your son and worried. He was cute. You like to say cubs are cute, but now he's been a lion for a while. How to hold that. I am not unique in that. I'm sure there are people here who have held that similarly. But what is the practice of that for me? As he's been stopped by the police again and again, and another child is shot, and the first thing people want to know, what did he do? Because that is the beauty and the horror of this practice for me. When I first got into practice, mindfulness, I'm a Buddhist now, but okay, you're doing mindfulness. And, you know, and the stress reduction. We gonna be stress-free. You know, it's just gonna be a big breath and it's all gonna be good. And anybody that wants to tell, you know, talk to me, I said, yeah, but there's always a big ass and in that. You will know how much you hurt. You will know where you hurt. You will know things that you'd rather not know. But the gift of that for me has been freedom. So I'm on my time, but yeah. What the practice has said is, girl, what you want to do? You want to be mad or you want to be free? You want to be scared or you want to be free? That's always the question. And for me in this moment, I have answered it. I'd rather connect with some practitioners And my ancestors, I'll just share this real quick. You know, I was in the Nation of Islam. Y'all can look it up. Yeah. And I was a baby Black Panther. And that earlier self is going, what you doing? What you doing? You know, they just asked you because it's Black History Month. And my ancestors rolled by and said, yeah, that's why we fought for Black History Month. So at least once a year, somebody would think about us. So I thank you for the invitation and the opportunity. Aisha bowing out.
Aisha, are you open to questions or comments from those assembled?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So if people would like to unmute their microphone, and customarily people will just kind of put their hands in gassho as they're going to address their question. Please feel welcome to do so.
Hi, I'm Andrea. Thank you so much, Aisha, for being with us and for talking a bit about your practice, your perspective. I'm really glad I could make it today. I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about your particular lineage and how you think it has applied in your life. It could apply more generally to folks who, as you said, maybe can't sit. It's not good for them to sit. They don't have the time. Just, you know, how you can tailor your practice given the lineage for the particular needs and situations of different communities, different people.
Yeah. Okay, if I understand, I want to make sure I understand your question. So are you asking about my meditation practice? Is that your curiosity? Okay. Yeah. Part of the gift of my foundation, a Dharma school, is that it suggests that you just rest in the sea of compassion for yourself. So in the breath, in the step, it doesn't have to be, as I said, fancy. It don't have to be fancy. It don't have to be, you know, it can be in the moment. It can be, yeah, just everything we know and talk, but yeah, that, and that constancy of taking those moments is the point for me. But that entry occurred when I let go of the kind of container in which that had to happen. You know, I gotta have 15 minutes or 20 minutes or 30 minutes. You know, this sometimes, you know, that nanosecond is what I've got.
Marcella.
Thank you, Aisha. I didn't have a question, but I just loved, I wrote some notes, and that mindfulness bell of sirens. I just love that so much, living in the city. And we had sirens. Our neighbor had her baby the other night and the ambulance came at 2 a.m. And I've tried to have a practice when I hear those sirens, especially if they're happening when I'm practicing, to be mindful and trying to send intents to people. Someone's maybe dying or house is on fire. And then the other night, a baby was born, but that was beautiful. And I just look forward to reading some of your other writing. I just really like that. I wanted to say thank you.
Shinran.
Thank you so much, Aisha. That was very powerful. So I want to ask a question about lineage and how we draw and experience our lineage. You know, my lineage, familial lineage, has a lot of trauma. And I tend to turn away from it rather than embrace it. Because if I feel that if I draw it too close to me, it'll keep me down and keep me stuck in this sort of whirlpool of trauma. So I'd like to hear what you said about that.
Yes, because I don't think there's a human being alive that doesn't have trauma in their lineage. I certainly do. What I welcome in is what a teacher of mine calls those light and bright souls. And not just the lineage of blood, of biology, right? The fact that I am here, I believe the fact that we're all here, somebody loves somebody. Okay. Maybe the known lineage is problematic. But I connect, you know, in my tradition and in West African tradition, the known and the unknown ancestors. Maybe the known aren't welcome, but there is unknown that I believe wishes us all well. And there's a beautiful blessing by the Chinook people and the saying over and over, teach us and show us the way. Because as I get closer to my own death, I'm looking for information. And so to cut myself off from that wealth of information and opportunity for growth works against me. So that's what I do, is to only welcome in those of love and care. Yeah, yeah. And also heart. There are people that have loved us that are not part of our, you know, we don't share DNA with. Lots of those, I believe.
Misha, I remember early in my practice, maybe when I was in my early 20s, I read a line in a Carlos Castaneda book. You know, he's quoting the master, and the master says to him, "You can make yourself miserable or you can make yourself strong. The amount of work is the same." And that was a real touchstone for me in those early 20 years. You know, to remind myself of the choice. Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of, in a certain way, were saying the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You mentioned about the difference between a sangha and I forget your term, group.
Association.
Yes. Yeah. Have you found a real sangha?
Oh yeah. But you know, it's the thing about, to me, community, it requires vulnerability. That I think that's what I've seen in terms of other spaces. It requires, to a degree, getting in each other's business. And I have found that, but it's, you know, it's not for everybody. I mean, but it's not just grits and groceries. Like, I can't get to the store. Can you get to, you know, it's not just that. It's I'm broke down. Okay. I don't, this shit is horrible. Okay. The people at work, you know, want me to act like it's all right now. That it's okay. You know, the world is saying everything's fine and my body, my heart, my spirit is broke down. Or I just want to cry. And I want to support spaces that allow that versus, and by the way, this is everywhere. I'm not saying this is just in Buddhist meditation circles. It's at church, it's at temples, this is everywhere. But ultimately, I truly believe that to move through this time, we gonna have to let our shit be known, literally and figuratively. Or not. And then let's say we associate. Because privilege, again, material privilege does provide space for that.
Marcella.
You mentioned having to travel before a long way for your meditation group. Is there a sangha in Anacostia that is close to home? I don't know if you live.
No, I don't live there anymore. But no, if I were there, I'm in Baltimore now, and there's there's stuff going on here, but I'm newly here, figuring my way to it. But if I were still there, I did a thing with young boys while I was there, the power of the pause for my peace warriors. Some of them haven't gone to jail, my son being one, so that was good. But yeah, but you have to have experience in this practice, and I thought it was someplace else. You know that thing, you gotta go to come back. So, thank you.
There is this arc sometimes in spiritual practice where people kind of need to leave home in order to endeavor to discover new parts of themselves. And I often think about those, cross-country journeys to San Francisco to practice with my teacher, and sometimes saying to myself, what am I doing, traveling all this way, when the writings say, well, you can be awakened right on your cushion at home. You don't need to travel thousands of miles. But yet somehow, sometimes it feels like in our spiritual journeys, there is at least a period where some of that struggle of transformation happens with going through some distance or travel or being in new places we haven't been. I wonder if that kind of fits a little bit with your exploration of practice.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's the journey. There's a song that says, I wouldn't give nothing for my journey now. My heart looks back and wonder how I got over. All of that wisdom of my lineage that I appreciate much deeper now than I did before. That's exactly what happened. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks so much for being here with us. I'm curious about your insights about changing organizations and the culture of organizations. I think I your comment really landed with me that when you sat with a Zen center, that you didn't find the vibe terribly welcoming. And like back to your comment about being an association rather than like a true community. And I think, that at times has been my experience as well. And I think that experience is actually had by a number of people who kind of come and don't come back. And, I've been studying the history of Zen a bit and, recently learned that in the history of Zen, monasteries had enslaved people supporting them. And so I find that we're in a US culture where, the institution of slavery is, I think we're still in the long shadow of that and the oppression of that. And it kind of, I think, has created the sort of culture that we're in, right? Like it's part of the ether. And then I also look at the history of Zen and look at, the history of slavery even within this religious organization or this religious lineage, and how it's not a thing that's really discussed, but I wonder how it's still with us. And sort of permeates the ether of the practice in a way to continue to create oppression. And I feel like the first rule about Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club, and the first rule of oppression is you don't talk about oppression, you don't talk about white supremacy, it's just not a thing, right? And so I guess I'm wondering, just from it, from your perspective, and my guess is that probably you have contributed to organizational change as well. You know, just what are your insights on that? And I guess just what are your thoughts?
Okay, well, you know, we talk a lot about compassion in all the different schools, and we don't practice it. We don't practice self-compassion. And because in my experience, we don't want to be with, we want to help. And I think the first thing to do is to say, what is my level of capacity? Let's not fall in love with the latest DEIA. Let's not fall in love with all the things. What can I do? If I'm scared, and I share this everywhere, if I'm on the metro and a bunch of Black teenagers get on and I notice that my body clenches up and I grab my purse, maybe you shouldn't be teaching them the practice of mindfulness. What is that's and that's not a hit. We've all been programmed, but that willingness to be with the level of capacity, what can I do? Rather than what we gonna write up. Maybe if we can get to know each other in the room for real and work together for a while before we jump to something, practice self-compassion and compassion to the people we're with. That takes time. And I know folks not feeling time, but there's, in my experience, there's no workaround. There's really no workaround. We're going to take care of here. We're going to take care of it there. Because what I have experienced in Ward 8 is that people, good people, would come in with great ideas and be mad that in 3 years they hadn't solved trauma in the community and actually be angry with the people they came to help. You know, so just... if we can, we're all in different places. I worry about the police coming to hurting or killing my son. I do not worry about ICE coming to get my son. Mm-hmm. We all sit at different places, you know? So that's just my offering. Just give each other something I bring into all the spaces I hold. Have mercy and offer grace. Being a human being is hard as fuck. And let's try to do what we can. Smile at each other sometimes. You know, if we could smile at each other, that would be good.
We just have a few minutes left. Is there, those of you that haven't asked a question, would you like to just, I don't know, say your name and say hello, or if you do have a question before we close?
This is Randy. Yes. I'd just like to say, Aisha, I really appreciate your strong and provocative discussion. It was quite interesting, and it's quite a path you've traveled. I did have a quick question. What was your religious or spiritual practice prior to becoming a Buddhist?
I was a Muslim, and on my way out, I was a Naqshbandi Sufi.
Thank you.
Salvit, do you want to say hello?
Hi, good afternoon, I'm Sylvette. And thank you for your talk. And I agree with you sometime. I mean, just smiling, it's a good start. It's a big start. Thank you.
And you have a beautiful one, so thank you.
And Clay.
Hi, speaking of, to continue that on, you have a beautiful smile. It's the first thing I popped on. I was like, oh my gosh, your smile is so nice. But yeah, this is one of those talks that, I don't know, probably ask anyone. I usually ask a question first. I don't know. I'm just like very eager. But since the beginning of your talk, it was just like a sponge, like where I just wanted to soak in everything that you brought from your lineage and your story and your work and all the things I don't even know about you. I saw that in your writing that you work with the LGBTQIA+.
Yeah.
And a lot of gratitude. I think you brought something very real to this global earth sangha that we have going on, you know. I think relationship is one of the most sacred things about this existence, and but real and raw relationship. And what you said about, you know, no one asks me these questions until Black History, but, you know, and, you know, I think that's something that is very true. And like I said, I just think that you're very real, and, but asking these questions and like experiencing what it is to be a true Sangha and like getting to know our community, and when the fruits of really getting to know one another's struggles and each other's life experiences is the work. And I just thank you for doing the work and spreading your message here today. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Aisha, we often close with the four great vows, but I would offer if there's a closing, a benediction, a prayer, a gatha that you would like to close us with, we would be warmly welcome, whatever that would be.
Oh, thank you. And I'd be honored. So may the merit of our practice being together, this choice to be with each other, may that merit, may all the awake and loving ancestors that allowed us to be here, may the merit of that practice move out and touch each and every being in all the realms, and allowing them to waken and be free.
Please feel welcome to unmute and say goodbye.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks again for inviting me. Be well.
Please come back.
I'd be delighted. I'll just come back and drink tea and listen.
Every Tuesday we're here.
Thank you so much. Be well.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Aisha.
Thank you, Mark.